I'm on ya.
I'm super high right now. Let's do this.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 19 of It's Just Bodybuilding. I'm your host, Big Ron Parlo, here with the other host, Dusty Hanshaw. I flipped the names that time. I normally intro
first. Yeah.
Yeah, just trying to change it up, see who notices, you know?
They will now. We told them.
Yeah, there you go. So we're doing the Q&A today, Coach's Corner stuff on It's Just Bodybuilding. Dusty, what's going on?
It's been another busy week, man. Crank it away. I've got us loaded. We have topics of our own, and then this bad boy is full of questions from people.
I'm glad you got a lot of questions. You know, we're happy to be on the 19th episode of this crazy experiment. I just got to remind everybody to click the subscribe button. Make sure you're following along, and then you get notified when the episodes come out, all that good stuff. Then you don't miss any of It's Just Bodybuilding. So what do you want to start with, Dusty?
I think we roll with the topics that we got first, because the questions, I want to kind of let them, they're still rolling. I haven't turned them off. So,
right, okay.
You know, that way by the end of this, we'll catch them all up, and then I'll apologize like I always do when I run out of time.
Well, actually, one of the first things I wanted to ask you about was, you know, you're trying some different stuff. I think you're probably just trying to have fun. You got a new training program. You got a new diet.
It's on fire.
Is it mixing up a bit for you?
You know what it was, you know, I did some work with John Jewett, which was awesome. I reached out to John for one thing, truthfully, was I wanted to see. He had put up a picture a couple months ago of his front double from a year ago and this front double now.
You said it changed a lot, yeah.
It was nuts. So I was like, okay, I got to learn how to do that. But then I was like, you know, I'm just going to have him write my training. So I took that. Learn some things from it, but at the end of the day, I'm still so me that I'd be in the gym for a long time and doing a lot of squeezing stuff, and it works, obviously. The problem is I'm a child. I was getting bored. I was like, we're sitting there, and I'm like, oh, shiny, and I would like get confused of what I was supposed to be doing. So then I was just kind of kicking around. I was like, all right, it's time to get serious, put some size on. And I went to sit down and like write a program, and I started writing a program that I've written 1,000 times. And I was just like, I want to do something different. So I was like, who's a crazy fucker that I know that trains like me? And JP was an obvious answer.
Ah, okay, okay.
So I reached out to him, said, hey, I just told him straight up, I'm like, I want to get to 320 as fast as possible. So, and that's where you come in. So he was like, all right, cool. And he doesn't think it's that hard, because obviously I hadn't been on anything for a long time, haven't really been eating, and I was hanging around 285, you know, just kind of from hard training, because I like to train. So we got rolling. The training is so much like what I do. Only difference is we bang out all the meat and potatoes early, all the compounds, and then I would go home with JP's program. Then we throw in some extra stuff. I wouldn't say squeezing stuff, but not blasting the logbook as much, which has been awesome. Don't do a bunch of rest pausing. So some of the rep ranges are down pretty low. You know, one of my things yesterday was 7 to 9 reps, or no, 6 to 9 reps. And I mean, I haven't done anything where 6 was my goal in a long time. You know, I mean, I guess deads, but that's it.
So like, you know, I see you do hack squats with like 8 plates for 15.
Right.
What the fuck do you have to put on a hack squat to get 8 reps?
Well, thankfully for legs, he's got the rep range a little bit higher. But I actually do have a friend he's machining me some bars that I can slide in between the plates. Cause right now the hack squat I use only holds 9 plates.
It's that Icarian pre-core one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's awesome. It's heavy, but so day one, I was at the top end of the rep range on my heavy set, and I was kind of like, all right, I got to figure out a way to load this thing up a little bit.
What does he have the rep range at for your heavy leg stuff?
So for that movement, the first leg day, my low rep was 8 to 10. And I think I got 11 with 9 plates, 18 plates.
Wow.
And then you drop back, which is also something I've always done, and back, do your second back. One, you know, 12 to 15-ish. But yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, the structure of it's cool. I train everything twice in 8 days. And then some of it's weird. Like, so you've got a traditional pull day, but then I have a pull leg day also. And that's where I'm doing my deads and my stiff and my RDLs and all that will always be on that day. So tomorrow is my last new day. And then I'm starting to beat the logbook, which is obviously, once there's a scoreboard, the whole game has changed.
That's cool, man. It's, you know, just having something just fresh. And I know how difficult it is to change your training because, like, there's principles that I just believe in them so wholeheartedly.
For sure.
That there's training programs I couldn't possibly entertain. And that might be closed-minded or whatever, but I just believe that there's certain things that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you're trying to find another program that fits the same philosophy, which is that's why it's hard to do something like, you know, find a new program. So I think JP's probably he'd probably have the most, you know, if I had to guess who had the most different splits on hand, JP's probably got like 10 different 2-day splits. 10 different 3-day. He must have a dozen push pulls that he used. Like, you know what I mean? Just because that's been his thing, right?
Yeah, the years of the same style. But what was nice was when I reached out, I was like, I want you to take everything.
Yeah.
You know, you train enough people, and I know you know how this is. I just want, like, it's been a long time since I've been a robot. So, I sent him my diet, and it's pretty much the same, but we added some food to it. But I literally told him, like, just everything. I just want to let go. And that's the other thing. I made sure to kind of point that out to people because I despise this in our industry. You take someone like me that trains a lot of people, and then they have a coach, and they like to say, oh, he's my second set of eyes, almost like they can't admit that they've handed the wheel over. Like, there's a fear they're not going to – their clients will – I don't know. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, no, do everything, and I'm just going to execute.
Well, I sort of see it this way. Because you're at the level you're at and JP is known for what he's known for, I see you going to working with JP for a little while, almost like adding another certification to your resume. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because just think of all the guys out there that are like, I wonder what JP does. And you're going to be able to say, oh, well, you know, I learned this from him. You know what I mean? That sort of stuff. It makes you better. It's just like, just think of all the stuff we learned working with Chris.
Oh, for sure. Like, I think my clients have junior Chris when it comes to nutrition. You know, I mean, we rap, and I know you and him do the same thing. Like, you know, you'll be talking and you're on the same page on everything you're doing anyways. The difference is in that case is just his experience level. You know, how long you'll never – the odds that you're going to bring something to me I haven't seen are pretty low. Right. The odds that you're going to bring something to Chris he's never seen is zero.
Yeah. you know, and I mean, we've all had it. Like, you've probably had people hire you partially because you worked with Chris for so long. They're like, oh, well, this guy must really know like that style of dieting or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's people that do that. So I look at all the coaches I've had, cause I've been lucky. I've had, you know, four coaches really, maybe three.
Right.
And they've all been really, really, really good, well-known, lots of successful clients, and are kind of their own style and own system of doing things.
Right.
And I learned so much from all three of them, you know?
Well, the thing is, you can take them and bring it into your repertoire. I mean, that's why I also get annoyed when people don't want to give credit on where they learned something, because it's like, you still, that is still your knowledge now. Like,
yeah.
So it's okay. Like, I mean, and because I hired so many people just for education, you know, I hired John Meadows for a long time. He wrote my training for a bit. It's funny because also people think that there's some issue. Like, I actually gained a ton from John Jewett. I just didn't need to execute it all. So there's a lot of great information for my clients now that it's going to be utilized. But for me, like you said, finding that perfect fit where I could literally be like, okay, just take it, was JP. And it's already been proven. I mean, he even functions like I do. You know, like I'll text him in the morning and be like, hey, yeah. I need today's training. He's like, oh, okay. 5 minutes later, it comes through my email. You know, he's just and we go back and forth. I mean, the other day we had a dumbbell press. Well, the problem is I'm too strong for the dumbbells in the gym. Right. They only go to 150. He wants a lower end rep range. I was doing a 4 second negative with a full 1 second pause at the bottom, and I still went above the rep range. So I text him. I'm like, I don't think the dumbbells are going to work. We don't have 220s in my gym like you guys do. I mean, I still train at a fitness center, basically, other than Indy sometimes.
Yeah. You're going to run into that problem. Yeah. It's funny because now I have 200-pound dumbbells.
Right.
And I don't use them.
Yeah, you needed them when you didn't have them.
You know
them.
What I mean? Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you having them for me when I come up.
I wonder, you know, they say the fish only gets as big as his tank, you know?
Right.
And I wonder if maybe if I would have trained at a gym that had 200s, it would have been bigger. So that's actually one of the reasons why I really wanted to get 200s. Right. Was almost like a symbolic, like, we have them. So, like, that makes our fish tank bigger.
Right.
You know what I mean? And maybe someone will grow into them there, you know?
Well, they're there. I mean, at the end of the day, let's be honest. When you start bodybuilding, you're looking at the end of the rack going, I'm going to play down there eventually.
You are looking at the end of the rack. That's for sure. I looked at the end of the rack my whole, you know, I remember getting down there. And I remember the day, like, there was a Gold's Gym that went to 150s. And right. I remember the day I put the 150s up on the incline.
Right.
Because that's like, because once you're inclined in the 150s, you're like, okay, I like own this whole rack of dumbbells now. Yeah,
these are mine.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I had somebody ask me that the other day. It was one of my Q&As. They said, why is it that so many people prefer a dumbbell RDL to a barbell? And I laughed. I'm like, where the fuck do they train? They got dumbbells heavy enough for RDLs.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have 300-pound dumbbells? That's awesome.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Proper stiff leg deadlift, you need a barbell.
That's what I told him. I was like, yeah, I don't do that.
Sometimes I will do, we just started because we trained with John Meadows that one day.
Right.
And he wanted to finish with these dumbbell, like really straight leg, sumo, like hold the stretch sort of like
right
deadlifts. And they weren't a failure. And I was just like, I'll do them. You know, I would normally not do them, but I'll do them with John, my partner, and I did them. And then the next day, my hamstrings and his hamstrings were so completely destroyed from the stretches, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's one non-failure light movement I see value in now.
because it beat my ass without
failure. It did beat my ass. Yeah, they weren't hard. But yeah, you're right. The 4-plate stiffs, the 5-plate stiffs, that's where you get the hamstrings from.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
That's not gonna happen on the 150 dumbbells in my gym. So
no. What about the diet? Like you said, you just added food. So like,
what carbs or what? Here, let's do what no one does and just read it because everybody likes to know this shit, and they think it's a big secret. So we'll go ahead and toss it out there real quick because it's so basic. All right, meal one: 6 whole eggs, 4 slices of toast, 14 ounces of grapefruit juice. Meal two: 10 ounces of chicken, 300-gram rice, and a muffin. Gotta have my muffin. Yep. I train after that. Meal three, 10 ounce chicken, 300-gram of rice, 2 more slices of bread. The bread's got about 20 grams per slice. Meal four, I do 10 ounces of fish or chicken, 300-gram of rice, and then I just do a soup that I like, Thai soup every day, delicious. Meal five is 10 ounces of flank, 200-gram of rice, a slice of bread. And then meal six is 6 whole eggs, 200-gram of Greek yogurt, and 20 grams of almond butter. That's it.
So the protein, fat before bed.
Yep. Yeah. So it's real. I mean, it's real basic. And all he did is the majority of that's the diet I already started. And we just added a little bit to it. And the idea, of course, is to see how much I change. But I was so inconsistent before. I gained 7 pounds the first week.
Right. Okay.
You know.
So what's with all the bread? Are you putting on anything on the bread? Or are you just eating like a slice of bread?
I toast it.
Okay.
I put cinnamon splend on it, of course.
Ah, okay.
It's basically dessert with every meal. Yeah.
That's the Dusty I should have known better.
Even distribution.
Yeah, oh, you probably have a pattern. You probably have a pattern you do with them. So they all, mathematically.
I read an R for Ron so that you're in it with me. I like, you know what it is? It's simple too, because I always, like I told him, it's been a minute since I've had to eat. And my concern was getting the food down, and toast I can just eat. I mean, it's 20 grams in a little square. Yeah. You know what I mean? If you can't get down toast, you don't fucking want it. You just don't want to get big. Something wrong with you. That's like chicken wings. Like, eat 40 chicken wings. Okay, turn on a baseball game. I got you.
Right.
Those fuckers will go down.
Speaking of baseball, did you see that Major League Baseball officially took marijuana off the banned substance list?
About time. So, now I can go play baseball.
So someone posted about that, and then I wrote, the only way I could sit through a Major League Baseball game is with a lot of weed. And then the first guy to like it and write a big laugh underneath was Chad Nichols.
He's like, I understand that. See, I go to the game for the park. I go to the game for the park and the terrible, expensive snacks. If you hadn't had a watered down Coke with some stale ass nachos in your life, you haven't lived.
For $20.
At least.
Yeah.
Euros. Well,
I've never been to a baseball game, but I've been to a Seahawks game, and I've had, you know, the $10 pizza that was disgusting.
Terrible. But you ate every bite.
Oh yeah.
Because it was $10.
You gotta do it. So I was thinking, you know, we were talking about training partners with Fuad last week, and he was talking about Paul. I was thinking, you gotta tell people a little bit about Matt.
Yes.
And you have to tell his bicep story.
Oh, both biceps.
I didn't want to ruin the end. I didn't want to ruin the end.
No, this is all coming. It just can't be ruined.
I wanted the people to think it was just one. And then, oh my God.
But what if it was on one day or 2 days or five? Who knows? We're about to find out, I guess.
Okay, so tell us a bit about Matt.
All right, so Matt, my longest lasting relationship.
That's why he came up, was we were talking about the people you've actually been able to keep things together with.
Yeah. I think he understands me. You know? He sees it. He gets me. He's like, you're really fucked up, but so am I. So it's fine.
Yeah.
So here's what's funny. So Matt, when I was doing the supplement world, Matt was running gyms. And he actually used to come into the stores, and I actually trained him when he was like 18 years old. I wrote his first DC program.
Okay.
And then, on and off, just run into each other in the industry. But about 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, we started training again. And it just clicked. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's funny, but you get to a point when you've trained with someone long enough that they know your strength curve.
Yeah.
Funny. Like he'll be going and starting to fail in a set, and we'll simultaneously say two more. Everyone else would assume that he's almost done. You know what I mean? Like, or, you know, I'll be getting ready for a heavy deadlift set, and he'll look at you, you getting 10? I'm like, yeah. You hear the voices too?
Yeah.
You know, so we hear the same voices, but the big thing is, truthfully, is the energy feed off. We don't really talk when we train. So it's literally just work the entire time, but the energy's there. Where if you were training with someone else and they weren't talking, it might be like an energy drag. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're just we're just locked into what we're doing. And the other thing is that I'm a huge proponent of, that some people don't do, is when you're on your set, I'm in your set. Meaning I'm counting your reps. I'm forcing more. I hate when people are silent. I'm like, well, then what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
Are you going to send a tweet while I'm fucking over here killing myself too?
That's the difference. That's the difference between having a training partner and having someone you work out with.
Right. It's true.
Right.
But the big thing true is we've got a good variation of essentially chase. So there are certain movements that I'm just stronger on, always will be. But if you've got a good partner, you're still watching their number. So there's a, you know, when he goes up a rep, I have to get two.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter if it's the same weight, because, or if he goes up 10 pounds, I'm like, fuck, okay.
Yeah. Even if it's a different weight, it's still the logbook. Yeah. You're like, he just beat his logbook. I have to beat my logbook.
Yeah. And then there's other things too, like hamstring curls. He just has fucking retarded strength in his hams, and mine are weak comparatively. And because of that, I think I chased even harder, you know, and he's still stronger than me on any curling movement in the hamstring, but my hams have blown up because of that. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
I don't think I'll ever, it's so funny because he would beat me by numbers, especially in the beginning, that were so substantial. He's like, am I lifting my hips? I'm like, nope, you're just way fucking stronger than me. Like, you know, he's thinking, I must be cheating. I got 9 more reps than you. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's like, no, you're just fucking destroying me. That's all that is. But that stuff is enormous. You know what I mean? Because he's at the point now where, you know, I mean, when we get asked if I'm a pro or whatever, it's both of us. No one's assuming that Matt's just the training partner. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Oh, are you guys pro bodybuilders?
Yeah. Very much so. And I'm like, no, he's smarter than that. Yeah.
he's already a millionaire. He doesn't have to do this.
He went and did more important things than this shit.
Yeah. So now you got to tell the story about the biceps, because we haven't told it on here, have we?
No.
I don't think it's come up.
No. Matt and I have been lying for so long about what happened. Because when he first tore his bicep, I have to tell this part first. Once we knew it was tore, I was like, hey, we got to talk. And he's like, what? And I'm like, we can't tell people that this is how it happened. Like, we got to have a bar fight. You had to have picked up a car that was on top of a baby.
Right.
I mean, there's got to be something, because the fact that we were bowling and I was drunk doesn't really – it's not as good of a story. We were bowling, and this is actually the terrible part. This is competitive nature 101. We're bowling, we're terrible, and it was very early on. He bowls down, and he goes, fuck, and he kind of looks at his arm, and I'm like, what? And he goes, that hurt. And I go, it's 14 fucking pounds. What do you mean it hurts? And he was like, I don't know. And he looks at him side by side, and you could see that it was torn. Like, it was up a little bit. And I was like, well, bowl with your left hand. Switch sides. He goes, all right. Because, I mean, we were only like 2 frames in. So he switches to his left hand. We bowled out the rest of the day. And he's like, I got to go. And I'm like, all right. So he's leaving. It was a group of us. And I'm like, I think he really tore his fucking bicep. So I'm like, oh, that's a problem. So I told him, you know, some of the rules in the States is like, get in right now. You can't call and make an appointment. You got to go in so they get you in right now, and then we can find out who's going to fix this fucking thing.
Right.
So gets that portion handled, and he's going to be seeing a doctor for his right bicep now, like Tuesday. It was a Saturday. The next day, he's got the dog training business. 2 dogs get in a fight. Pulling them apart, he tears the left one. So now he's got no arms. He calls me. Or did he call me? No, he shot me a text, because we don't actually speak on the phone. That's weird. he texts me, and he goes, it's been a bad week. I was like, what? He goes, dog's got in a fight. The left one's gone now, too. I'm like, of course, first thought in my mind, well, now you're useless to me. I don't even know if I need to know you anymore. I mean,
can't spot
my bad.
Me.
My bad. Yeah, good of you to be. Shit.
Fuck.
So yeah, both buys are done, and it wasn't. He was sure, but I, of course, with the back of my head, like, maybe it's a hard strain or whatever.
Or they're still kind of attached, and
because it never discolored. Even his right one, it didn't discolor by Tuesday. So I was like, maybe it's a partial tear. You know, nope. Both of them are fucking torn off completely. So he's got to go in, get the surgery. Now, mind you, you got no arms now.
Yep.
I told him, I'm like, you're buying a bidet. I'm not wiping your ass. We are not that tight. It's not going to happen. I'll spray the button if you need my help, but that's about it. So food, eating, you think about this.
No, fucking working, unbelievable.
I mean, literally, I was like, you know, for all the, like, you guys were talking about overcoming injuries last week, and I thought to myself, like, this is so much worse because it's not like it's life. Everything you can, crazy. I mean, imagine anything you can do with your arms that you cannot do.
Like
nothing.
Well, I mean, fuck. You're like, someone has to take care of you all day long.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. So, and if you're someone who is self-made in every fucking possible way, the idea of needing someone to get you a glass down so you can have a drink
or wipe your ass,
fill it, and I need a straw and
someone's got to
shower pants. Yeah, you can't get those on by yourself.
Someone's got to hold your dick while you pee.
Masturbation.
Like, it's fucking tricky. Yeah, there'd be a lot of sympathy hand jobs there.
And I have terrible calluses, so I felt bad about it.
I'm sure Matt found a way.
Yeah, of course. He's a good man. But the interesting thing was, so he was out for 4-6 months and then came back in. But as expected, everything else was healed when he came back. And he was good. He was getting therapies and stuff done on his other body parts. He had some knee issues and stuff while he was out. And fast forward to now, and he's by far the biggest he's ever been. Like,
right,
not even close. And then, you know, leaned up a ton. I mean, it's funny because I told him, I'm like, dude, you're looking more and more like a pro bodybuilder. As I get fatter and fatter, I'm looking less and less like one.
Right. You're gonna be 320, and he's gonna be like 270 hard.
Yeah, and look way bigger, of course. Look
big. Yeah, yeah.
You gotta love the way that round shoulders and shit look. So
right, that's one of the reasons I'm dieting now. You know, because if I'm not gonna be huge, I just look kind of like 320, yeah. 330. That looks like you're like, oh, I know what that guy's doing. He's fucking huge.
Yeah, if you're even a t-shirt, is massive.
But if you're walking around at like, you know, 12% body fat at 290, eh.
Yeah. Well, especially if you have any height. I mean, what are you? How tall are you? 6'1"?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm way down. I was 264 the other morning again. And like, I feel great, but I look way better.
Well, yeah, because like, you're tight and everything too.
You know, I'm not, you know, the size, of course, is not the same as it was when I was, you know, smashing the stacks, Dusty.
I have no idea what that means.
So, yeah, no, that double bicep tear story is one of the craziest injury stories of a bodybuilder I've heard.
Oh,
and the fact that neither one of them was in the gym too, you know?
You know what though? I mean, I know you and I talked about this with yours. I'm so glad they weren't, because that's just a different animal. Like, I always wonder when a guy tears his quad doing squats, like someday you got to squat again.
Yeah.
And someday you got to squat the same number that took you down. And yeah, even though, you know, and the doctors will tell the mental fuck of that, like even, or I thought about that weekend that you tore yours and we were there, we were planning to train. You would have torn them both. For sure. Yeah. Because had it torn, because I already know your doctor told you, and I knew because your injury shouldn't have happened. That was just waiting to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there are very strong odds that weekend you were tearing that thing one way or another. I'd much rather you tore it on a trampoline fucking around than us doing a hack squat and then one goes and the other goes.
Yeah. 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 I had tendinosis in that knee for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, tendinosis is like, for those who don't know, you know, you get tendonitis first, which is the inflammation. You know, you had a 6 weeks to get that to go away if you rest it. But then if you just keep doing that over and over and over and training on tendonitis over and over, you get degenerative tendon issues, which is tendinosis. And that's when the fibers are all like, they're not healing straight. And there's all sorts of, you know, little holes and gaps in the tendon. It's just degenerative. So I remember when I went in for an MRI on my knee at one point, they're like, oh yeah, you've got a few little holes in your tendon and there's like a bunch of scar tissue. It's still solid, but it's, you know, it's really, really beat up.
Right.
And then of course, you know, I wasn't surprised when it snapped on me. But now that tendon is just thick and white and dense and it's like, it's completely remodeled.
Yeah, Brent. It's like having a new piece put in.
It's crazy what the body does when it's like, you know, I'm sure you've had this, where you'll have like a nagging injury mm-hmm. that'll last a year, and you'll know someone else will have a major injury and it's completely healed and rehabbed all inside that year that you're managing this little pain.
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, that's like, you know, it's like if you injure the body big time, it just goes to work. But if you just injure it like a little bit, it just,
Yeah, but you don't let it go either. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, you don't.
Because I was telling, I tell people all the time. So when I had my my hernia surgeries, I had three of them at once. Back in the day, I don't know what the fuck they're doing now, but dudes are like training 7 minutes after surgery. I was out for like 2 months.
Yeah.
They wouldn't like, they were very specific because of what I do. They were like, don't, you'll ruin them. So my peak at that point, my biggest was 286 pounds, before I went in. And then I went in and had the surgery, and I was one of those people that just fell into like a depression. I didn't eat, and when I did eat, it was garbage. And so when I was released to train again, I was like 258 and fat and just small, right, and looked like shit. 3 months in, I was 294 and the biggest and best I'd ever been. Because every little tiny nagging thing like you just talked about, those were all gone too, because I didn't touch my body for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
You know? And so I start to look back and think about like Ronnie Coleman, how he used to take like 2 or 3 months off every year. And it really clicked in my brain that if you have it in you to take a break, it probably more than pays off. And everyone is so afraid of taking a week or two off. And I'm over there thinking, and I wonder if I could make 6 weeks. Like if I could actually keep myself out of the gym for 6 weeks,
right,
I do believe I would progress faster than I do now. But I'm just not capable. I've tried.
Yeah. I tell a lot of people that if they say, you know, what advice would you give the younger you? You know, that question you get all the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think we've done it a few times on here. But the main one is I tell myself to take more planned weeks off.
Yep.
And I would tell myself to do more like maybe a 2 or 3 week stretch where I didn't train to failure here and there.
Yep.
It was just mentally something that I couldn't even wrap my head around for so many years, you know? But I mean, I think that would have probably been really good for me, you know? And it's something I got my clients doing more of that now, you know, like one of my clients just took a full week off the gym and then very next week back smashed all his numbers.
Yeah. No, well, you're also dying to get back in the gym.
Yeah,
right?
That's part of it. You know, the music was extra loud that week too, you know?
Your body is on another level. But it's you know, the only thing that I always am – it's funny, but we've had a couple things on this show, which I'm going to segue with too, is these rules of these breaks apply if you're someone that's actually training that hard.
That's the thing.
Because
Most people don't even need it.
What you're talking about, what you're training every day is my break.
Yeah.
And I think that the quicker people can get to that, and that's not like an ego thing. I was just telling Aceto about that with my leg training. The day I learned that I never had trained before.
Yeah.
Because I was doing extensions with a guy that was kind of mentoring me. And after the sixth set, I was like, how many sets are we going to do? And he literally looks at me and goes, I'm just waiting for you to do one.
Yep.
And it was like, so then he pushed me through a set. And I literally realized that day I've never worked out before. But what was interesting, thankfully for me, is my brain is wired in a way that then that just fell into every single body part, every single exercise, everything. So everyone needs that moment, because then once you start training hard enough, these rules apply to you. If you're already training what I consider to be half-assed, then you're already on your break. You're fine. Just keep training.
Well, I had a client just recently, you know, gave her a brand new program, and she was the type of person that trained every day.
Right.
Like it was just part of her routine. She trained every single day. And so when I gave her the program, it was 5 days a week or two on one off. I can't remember.
Right.
And she's like, oh, like, you know, these days off are going to be really weird. And I was like, yeah, just trust me. Like you're supposed to need them.
Yeah.
You know,
you should need these.
Yeah. And then like within a week, she's like, oh, wow, I actually need days off now for the first time.
Which is good. That means she already had the intensity there. She just needed the program.
Yeah, yeah. So now she's like, you know, taking the days off and actually like appreciating them and feeling like she's like, oh, after leg day and stuff.
Yep.
You know, so it's more than the program. You know what I mean? Like what's on the paper isn't really what matters. It's the understanding of that stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I write programs I could never finish. Because if you're training at this level, they're too much. And I've told clients that before. I'm like, they're like, oh, is this what you do? I'm like, no, no, that's crazy.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Did I tell you about when I first started working with Scott Abel and he gave me the volume program?
Yes. You haven't said it on the show though. You have, this is actually quality.
So, you know, I was doing Dorian from like grade 11, like all the way, like we're talking 1992 to like 2004.
Right.
Just straight Dorian, you know, got all the way up to 300 plus pounds. I was 320 actually. So, you know, it was like a very effective program. But when I started working with Scott Abel, who was like a famous Canadian coach who turned a lot of people pro.
Way ahead of his time.
He had more of a volume training approach. It was still like he still believed in training really hard, but he just had a lot of sets on there. Mm-hmm. And he sent me the program and I went through it the first week. And I remember thinking like, holy fuck, this is the most brutal, unbelievable amount of work. I this is fucking crazy.
Right.
And, you know, I was doing, because I was training exactly the same level of intensity.
Dorian on a high.
Dorian style, but like four sets of press, four sets of squats, four sets of hacks, four sets of extensions.
Those were all to absolute failure and beyond.
All to failure, all with forced reps and just like fucking smashing shit. And I remember I like called him and talked to him and I was like, dude, like I puked on leg day. I puked on back day. I puked on
like, arm just, day.
Yeah. Like just, I'm like, you know, it took me, you know, 2 hours and 20 minutes to train legs. I was so fucked up after quads. I had to like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's like, huh. You know, and then as we're talking and I'm explaining what I'm doing, he's like, oh, he's like, okay.
Slow down, kid.
He's like, okay, we got to talk about like how much you're actually exerting yourself on these sets. You know what I mean? It's like really only set like 3 and 4 where I want you in like the, you know, what's that range of perceived exertion or whatever?
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. I can't remember, you know, of like a 9. You right. know? And I'm like, oh, well, all of these sets are 10.
Yeah, all of them. All 24 sets. He's like, oh, I'm looking for 6.
Yeah. And then he said, you know, like, you have to pardon the miscommunication on that one. But it was right. just like the craziest fucking thing. I remember how I still look back at that leg day. That first leg day I did took 2 hours and 20 minutes. It's fucking
and you move. See, if it took me 2 hours and 20 minutes, that wouldn't mean too much because I take my time.
That's for you, Dusty.
Exactly. I'm gonna go wash my hands again. They feel dirty.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny though. That's how I think it's funny though because at one point, same scenario in the opposite direction. When I was working with Chris the first year, he sends me a text and he says, "Hey, today I only want you to train at like 70%." And I read it. So I texted back and I was like,
oh, silence.
I don't know what that means. And I was like, I mean, cause it's a percentage too. Like I understand you. I was like, but I don't really know how to train at 70%. He sends back laugh out loud. He goes, I remember when I had this conversation with Evan Santapani, he too did not understand what that meant. So he goes, how about this? Train as hard as you want, but I want you to knock off 30% of your working sets. I'm like, oh, I can do that.
Right. Because that actually has like a, you can actually it's, like see that.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know where I know where failure is. Right. Now we're not starting the set is. In between, that's a mess for me.
I remember him messaging me and going, okay, like today I just want you to train like 70-80% today. You look pretty tired. And I'm like, I just couldn't wrap my head around that either. And then his words were, train like a California pro. Of course, you know, he's laughing. But and he's like, you know, talk to girls a bit. Check your abs between sets. Do that sort of stuff.
Fucking love Chris.
And I was like, abs. I was like, oh, okay, I get what you mean. 70-80%
time a little bit. It's so true. That's what I tell clients now that when they wonder, I'm like, oh, just train like everybody else in the gym. They're like, oh.
Yeah. So I think the best I actually could do when Chris would ask me to do that is I just crash my volume down to like just a few hard sets and then leave.
Yeah, it's just, you know what it is? It's actually difficult to do because especially if you're someone who, I mean, I like facts. Like, so I don't really, I mean, I really don't know where 70 is and I'm going to do one more than I think because I definitely don't want to be below, you know, but it does, the point of the whole thing is always, it does have its place.
Right. Because
sometimes that, it's like everyone wants their cheat meal and their bullshit food. Sometimes you just need to back the train down for a couple of days.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your body comes back to life.
Drop cardio out, skipping cardio. Like sometimes I'll just tell a client, no cardio for 3 days.
Yep.
And they're like, what? They're like panic. And I'm like, trust me, like you'll feel so much fucking better.
You're going to get better. And you get that though, because they know and so do you that they still have fat to lose. They're thinking, why are we pulling cardio out?
Yeah.
Trust me.
It'll yeah, come, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I actually had cardio down here on our list of topics.
Oh,
because I wanted to talk about this because I think we've done things a lot differently.
Yes.
You've done a lot of your shows with a step mill, right?
Yep. Step mill and bikes.
Step mills and bikes.
Yeah. Spin bike.
Okay. Like exclusively?
Those are my primary. I mean, I do treadmill walking, but I really had great success. And the opposite of you is hit cardio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I blast it as hard as I can for 15 minutes and I'm good.
Right.
You know, so 20 seconds all out, 40 seconds, slow motion, 20 seconds. And I like that because number one, I have my attention span. I can get done soon. And it's literally like one thing I miss since being a bodybuilder is I'm not an athlete at all anymore. And anytime I can just kind of feel like semi-athletic.
Right,
like,
right.
Like right now, that's like if I go up two steps at a time on a stairway, I'm like, athlete.
Oh, yeah. Or if you're in the airport and you got the ramp up and the stairs up, sometimes I take the stairs. I'm like, oh, yeah, doing my best.
I still got this.
Still got it. Actually,
that's why I like it. Go ahead.
I got to grab my power cord. We have another human moment here, Dusty. You got me twice.
Yes. This is a powerful moment because I'm the one that's supposed to forget this shit, everybody.
Dusty got me on the charger. Happens to the best of us, Dusty.
I'm just happy because we're at 2-1 now.
You actually
lost the charger twice. I was just telling everyone, I'm like, this is really something I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, that's more of a Dusty move. More of a Dusty move. So, yes. So, we were talking about cardio. And yes. I was saying how I hated steppers.
Yeah, like you hate them now because you have to buy them and fix them.
They're the worst. It's like, let's invent something that nobody needs, because there's plenty of stairs in the world, Dusty.
There are. I've seen them. They're right next to the elevator that I take.
Yeah. So let's invent something that's really not needed at all, and then we'll make it really big, really heavy, put a ton of moving parts in it, lots of fail points, and then we'll make them $10,000 each, and we'll force all the gym owners in the world to buy 10 of them.
At least. Yeah, you're doomed as a gym owner because that, you know, I mean, you know this because they've come up a ton since we started. But like it used to be, if you went to a gym that had like three of them, you're like, oh, well, we got three. We're good.
You right. know?
Well, because one's always broken.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that leaves you two. You got good odds that you're getting on a step mill. When I was first competing, I bought a membership to Lifetime just because they had 32. So I knew I could always get on one of the $320,000 worth of equipment machines, hop on there, good to go.
That's crazy.
Had nothing to do with the view from the back, forward, nothing.
Nothing to do with all the soccer moms doing their morning cardio. We just added a fourth step mill, so we got four and they all work.
And you have my favorite one.
Well, we have three matrix, but we have one brand new one, yeah. So it's waiting for you.
I'm not going to use it. I just like them.
Your butt's not going to fit in with the other butts at our gym, though.
That's good. It's very good. You know
what I mean? Yeah, you'll definitely be the one that like, oh.
What doesn't belong?
Yeah.
You bring kids up to see if they've got a brain. What's not the same?
Right. Which one of these do we not want on the step?
So you did all your cardio on a treadmill, though, pretty much, right? Almost exclusively.
So I also did a lot of outside walking because I remember like I started competing back, you know, blah, 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 way fucking, you know, dinosaur ages ago. And a lot of the pros like would just walk outside in the morning.
Well, plus there's snow, so there's more resistance.
Well, I like to think it made me harder, you know?
Right.
So I remember like Dorian saying he'd either ride the bike for 30 minutes or sometimes he'd walk around the park by his house.
Right.
And so I was just like, oh, okay. And then the guys in Australia would do that. They would just walk around the park in the morning. Right. Nobody rode the bike at the gym. Like my two buddies that did the one, like my buddy that won the universe and my other buddy that turned pro and did the Olympia and stuff, John and Nick.
Yeah.
I don't remember them ever riding cardio machines at the gym back then. Right. It was all just walking outside. I mean, it was Australia, so it's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
But so there was no like really intense cardio being done. It was all like that easy, low intensity, just walking stuff.
Right.
So that's what I came up on. And that's mostly what I did. So I used the treadmill almost exclusively, some bike.
Mm-hmm.
I'd hit the stepper here and there just if I felt like I just wanted to kill myself one day. Like I'm gonna do 45 minutes on the stepper just to be a fucking soldier.
Tomorrow, we're not doing that again.
Tomorrow, back to the treadmill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
civilian time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember in 2004, Scott Abel gave me some bike sprints to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 2004. He was way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Like no one else was doing them. They were different back then, though. The tension wasn't high.
Yeah.
It was
you're moving your body.
It was just speed based, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I remember doing those. But that's pretty much it for cardio. Did mostly walking on the treadmill, you know? So I got results from it, you know, but I also
can, I just think, you know what my tricky spot is for the outdoor cardio is I don't think that everyone understands when they start to slow down.
Yeah.
Or when they start, you know what I mean? So for me, for clients, like they can tell you, I'm like 3.4 miles an hour, 8% incline. Do not touch the fucking machine with your hands. Like, I also don't think people realize like, why do you think you like putting your hands up on top? Because it gets easier.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me. If you don't believe me, put your hands on top for 5 minutes and take them off for 5 minutes.
Right.
You're now keeping up with the machine. You know what I mean? So that's something that, you know, it would be very difficult because you're right. I mean, I used in 2011, I did one of my sessions outside every day just because I was doing so much cardio to get peeled like that. I just needed one day to just kind of go out. And, but I think I might have pushed those ones harder because I was concerned if I wasn't going hard enough.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because like, it kind of feels easier.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. And I do totally get because, man, sitting in a gym, I don't know how people survive before YouTube. I set that thing on there and I'm like, let's go. And I don't look up. I don't see anything. I'm in YouTube heaven. That's it. Like I'm purposely not watching anything right now. Because when I prep this year, I need to have plenty of backlogged video to watch.
You know, I never really watched a lot of stuff doing cardio. I mostly always listened to music and would just like meditate.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, zone in for sure.
Yeah, it'd just be like, it would all be total departure from like reality. I would just be thinking about getting my glutes ripped and thinking about how I wanted to look and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
you did a lot of like, just, you know, turn off the world when I would do my cardio.
Yeah, a lot, man, sure.
And then I went through a phase where I would watch the Daily Show. So I'd do like half hour at midnight and I'd watch the Daily Show back when Jon Stewart was on.
Yeah.
And I used to watch the Daily Show when I would diet. That'd be one thing I'd put on.
Right.
You know?
Balance out all that hardcore with the Daily Show.
yeah, you know, sometimes that last cardio of the day, just have a bit of a chuckle on the bike or something. So but yeah, mostly I see people watching a lot of movies and Netflix and everything like that at the gym. They got their phones and tablets out and stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, I was always sort of like close my eyes and just fucking ride the bike, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So I remember when I did the 99 Albertas, I was living in Grand Prairie. And I mean, it gets fucking brutal cold up there, like,
right,
you know, deathly Canadian winter. Right. And, you know, it'd be minus 29 Celsius, minus 30 Celsius, which is fucking brutal Fahrenheit. That's the actual temperature.
Yeah. Fucking
brutal. I would bundle up big winter jacket, you know, balaclava, put gloves on, and I would do a half hour walk around the frozen lake. Yeah, in the park by my
your
house.
Your neighbors thought you were fucking insane.
Yeah, I'd do a half hour walk around that, and you'd actually, like, I'd be totally warm because you're just so much heat. And, you know, the big gloves and shit. And I'd do a half hour walk around the lake, come back to the house, eat my breakfast. You're awake after that. Let me fucking tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to sleep for the rest of the day. Like, you're just like, you know? And then, of course, you know, springtime comes, and by the end of the prep, you're walking and, like, you know, 20 plus 20, you know,
right. the time has changed during this prep, not just you.
Yeah, exactly. The summer body has emerged.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah. So you got some questions, Dusty? Do you want to hit those?
I got a ton here. So
we've been almost an hour, man.
That's the thing. We talk too much. What can I say?
I like how we had Fouad on and I think we asked one listener question.
Oh, I know. But you know what? And thank God the reviews were awesome on it, so we're fine.
And it was funny. The one listener question I asked triggered him to tell that insulin story.
which took up the rest of the show.
Which people, how many people mentioned that to you?
Oh, God. You know, when I've had a few of those similars that I've heard along the way of guys making that mistake not knowing because they use growth and then they use insulin, and their coach says, take 8 units. And they're like, okay.
And they're just, they don't know how to measure it.
I send pictures.
Yeah.
8. You see this? This is 8. This is not 8.
That is 80.
Exactly. All right. Here we go. Bah, bah, bah. I like this one. Is it bad to switch coaches? How do you move on even though you're all like family?
Oh, well, I mean, fuck. Well, you got to do what you got to do. If you really feel like it's the best thing, but just make sure that you're not blaming them for something that's your fault.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, he can't get me in shape. Or are you cheating on your diet?
Right.
Because if you're not doing exactly what he's telling you, then the next coach isn't going to work either.
Right.
So just make sure that you're honest with yourself, really honest with yourself. Are you really busting your ass? Like, are you really busting your ass? Because you have to really want it. And the next coach is going to be just as effective as this coach if that's what you're going to bring to the table. So be honest with yourself. Make sure you're not blaming them for something that's your fault or making them the scapegoat. Mm-hmm. Also ask, like, how loyal have they been to me? I don't know the relationship.
Yeah. I mean, these guys sound like it's close, but I definitely understand I can see how that's a fearful thing. You're like, we're fine. I just want to try something new.
And then as a coach, I really am like, if someone's like, hey, you know, thanks for the like, I've had people win shows and not hire me again.
Right.
Right. So it's just, you just can't take it personal. Like I helped someone win the overall at a show and then they left. And they went and worked with another coach the next year. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, but whatever. I wasn't offended. And then, you know, maybe they need a certain type of handholding, or maybe they need a certain type of like rah-rah.
Yep.
That's just not me. I give a different type of rah-rah, you know, I don't know. Everyone's different. So I just didn't take offense. And then they came back and they said, hey, would you work with me again? And I was like, yeah, sure. And we won another show.
Right. Yeah, that's all. You know what, though? I think that that's the key, though, is I keep in mind how many people I've hired. The only person that doesn't apply is Chris, to be honest with you, is I wouldn't work with someone else for getting me ready for a show.
Yeah.
Because for me, he is the absolute best there is, for my style. And I've seen plenty of people leave Chris and have success somewhere else, or leave Chris and come back, you know? So I definitely get that, but it's something I think you also got to consider when you hire someone. I tell everybody who sends me a questionnaire, you already know I know what I'm doing, but make sure I'm the right fit for you. Because, like, this might sound funny to some of you guys, and I'm sure it's throwing some of my clients off. If you don't send in your update, I don't ask you for it. I got shit to do. I can't want this more than you do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I tell people up front, like, if you're looking for someone to, like, hold your hand and babysit you, don't hire me. I don't want to do it. Yeah. But if you'll do your shit, you know, it's the whole give me 100%, I'll give you 110. Give me 80, I give you zero.
Right.
I don't even want to work with you. That's not fun. You know, so I've had people like, I didn't send my, you didn't say anything. I'm like, I know. It's your job. You send it. You know what I mean? So, you know, those things are important. Okay. Some basic stuff I think is key for you. Best tips for a successful off season between diet, training, and gear.
Well, you got to get your head into it. You got to look at it as an opportunity to actually get better. Mm-hmm. And not squander the time. You have to get yourself excited about short-term goals. Don't just think about next year on stage and how your glutes are going to look. That's not what you should be like off season. You should be thinking, okay, I want a barbell row 365 for 10 reps.
Right.
And I want to incline press 315 for six. And I want to just set new numbers for yourself. Focus on the gym, focus on getting stronger. Focus on perfecting your mechanics, making improvements in your execution. That's where the muscle is.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about next year's show and daydreaming about the, you know, I always say it's like, it does you no good to just think about the next hot chick you're going to bang. You know, like, you got work to do.
Right.
Like, get to work. Like, yeah, the show, the glitz and the glory and the rip glutes and the trophy, I get it. But just focus. You have to do a bunch of fucking trench work right now.
Right.
And you have to get your head into it, you know? And it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to feel, oh, I don't want to eat. Just get over all that.
Yeah. No, I think the biggest thing that I look at when somebody asks that question or why people are very successful in preps, but they don't get any better in the off season is when something is far away, you have this belief that you have time you don't have.
Yeah.
You lose a week, you lose 2 weeks, you lose time. You know, I literally tell my guys in the off season, because right now I've got about 30 people I work with year round. And I tell them today, perfect. That's all I want you to think about. When you get done with the day, I need to know you ate every single thing they were supposed to eat today. Some of my guys actually do their advanced enough that they're allowed to eat on top of what I have in me.
Right.
And then was your training absolutely the best it could have been today? You know, so all of these things, because that is what it's that one day at a time that equates to that huge change. The problem people have is that motivation. You know it, like after a show, everyone's, I'm going to be so much better next year. And then about 3 weeks later, they're missing meals. They're, you know what I mean? Because it's so far away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think the short term goal setting is really helps to keep things moving in a direction.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what Gary Vee talks about all the time. And I use this line with my clients is everyone has an urgency for the end goal, but no one has urgency for today.
Right.
You need to have patience to win your first overall show. That might be 2 years down the line, But that's going to happen if you have urgency for today and getting those meals in and taking everything and sleeping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just where you put that attention.
Another one I heard the other day was one day or day one.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like that. And that's all it said. I think it was just a meme. It just said one day or day one. And I was like, that's fucking pretty good, because that's a lot of people just can't get going.
Yeah. That's first step. Start.
Yeah.
You know, see where you're at there with that. We've answered this, but, you know, I think a little extra depth. I've answered this. Can you be a successful bodybuilder without HGH and insulin?
Oh, I just had that question the other day. Insulin's not required at all. I've seen too many guys do turn pro, compete, never hate insulin, don't use it. It's just, I don't think you need it. Some guys get good results from it. Some guys feel it's part of the reason why they're as big as they are. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it can't be used in a way that is effective. I'm just saying that I don't think it's like if you told me Patrick Moore had never taken insulin, I would believe you.
Right. Yeah.
And he's eighth at the Olympia. So I don't know. Like, you know, that's just an example.
It's not a hard sale. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
It's not a hard sale. The HGH, though, we both know what real pharmacy HGH is like.
Yeah.
For my genetic limitations, mm-hmm. I think it made a difference.
Right.
The amount of, I think GH was something that, to get as big as I did. I got to 300 without it, but 330.
It's also how it looks. I mean, that's the one thing that I realized was like,
you know,
if you're, it just, your muscle starts to look like bubbles.
And I did notice, I do think, you know, that the only thing I ever really, because GH isn't the type of thing you feel, like you don't go in the gym and go, oh, that GH is kicking in.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not like that. It's I'd be on like 50 grams of carbs and I'd have this insane pump.
Yeah.
And in the gym, I would look like I was on 500 grams of carbs.
Yeah. You were peeled down and then you had a huge cheat meal last night.
Yeah. And then I might feel flat and dieted out the rest of the day. But in the gym, there was there's something's going on there.
Yeah.
I would say that you could definitely turn pro without GH. I know lots of guys that have done it.
Yeah, for sure.
Countless. But it's, you know, that next level of size and fullness and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something. The other thing is a lot of people believe you have to be on such an extreme amount of time. There is a value to me in GH during your prep. If you couldn't afford to take it the rest of the time and you could get, you know, 4 IUs in for your 16-week prep, it'll be worth the money.
That's how I was. I wasn't like an off-season GH guy. Mm-hmm. Even when kits started, because I come from the days when kits were $1,500.
Right.
if you even saw, I remember I was already at my second nationals before I even saw GH.
Right.
I was already 300 pounds and I saw my first Serono kit and I was like, holy fuck, a Serono kit. And it was worth $1,500. And I remember guys used to save up $3,000. So they could get 2 kits to prep on. So they'd have, it was like, what was it? 128 IUs per kit.
Yep.
So they'd have
7 18ers.
Yeah. So they'd have 14 of them. Yeah. Yeah. And they'd save up $3,000. I think the first time I did that was 2003 or 2004 or something. I saved up $3,000 to get 2 kits. That was just how expensive it was, man. And so you take 2.5-3 IUs a day and try and stretch it out over the prep.
Right. You're doing the math on exactly what gets you the show.
Yeah. Maybe just training days, not days off. Like you're just trying to stretch it out. But it was just, the doses were laughable, but it was real.
Yeah.
And then there were years where I didn't even use it because I was like, oh, I can't fucking afford it, you know?
Right.
And then, of course, all the generic kits. What would that have been like? 05, 6, 7, all the blue tops started showing up. And
$400.
Yeah. People would be like, well, these ones are good, but these ones aren't. And these ones are shit. And then it was just such a gong show for so long.
Yep.
And then I remember it was actually my worst placing, 2013. Because I had a couple of injuries that really hindered how I looked.
Right.
But I used real Omnitrope for like, that was the longest I used it for. I used it for 6 months straight. And I have a photo of like, I'm like 3 months out from the show.
Right.
And I think we're at an expo and I'm like in a big group photo. And I look at that photo now and I'm like, oh, that's what it was. That's the real Omnitrope.
Blown out of your mind.
Yeah, like it's, I wish I would have taken more pictures at that expo because I think that was like, because I was half dieted, but still super full.
Right.
And I was like, oh, Jesus, I didn't realize how I looked back then. Like, I wish I had more pictures because that was kind of crazy. And I remember that was the year I used real Omni for like a longer period of time.
Right.
But I'm still talking like three I use a day.
Yeah. That's the problem is everybody has these numbers in their head. Well, this is what the pros are using. I laugh. I'm like, no, I don't know anyone that's using 18 units a day. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Like, right.
There's only a handful of guys I know that could afford to do that if they wanted to. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Well, what about you? What do you think, like, about the GH?
I mean, I'm with you 100% because I've done both, obviously. I've never used insulin in the off season before. Right. I use it to basically when I flatten out during prep. So. You know, typically when I'm in prep and you guys see muffins pop in, that means that I probably had, you know, 8 units of insulin that day.
Not 80.
Yeah.
Just eight
units. I like it pre-workout because I would go in and just feel it and love that aspect of it. And then
the pump.
Yeah. Just wacky pump. And then you could see because you've been flat for a while. So when you're exploding back in, it's a mental high for sure, but necessity, not even close. In fact, because of that, I suggest people be cautious because it is something you can fuck yourself up with. Now that being said, no offense, Fuad, because you went to sleep, but you have to do something stupid to fuck yourself up. You have to go to sleep after taking 80 units. You know what I mean? Because there are so many warning signs with insulin. That's why it's bad when people ask me about it, they're like, I'm so afraid of that. And I'm like, you have no idea how many times your body gives you a warning of this is coming. You should probably have some carbs now.
I've got a couple of insulin stories and I thought I should probably tell at least one of them.
I feel like the world needs to know.
Okay. So I'm not going to name any names. My old friends will know what I'm talking about. So I remember this is like a long time ago. I had this buddy. He was a big dude, like bodybuilder. And he owned a supplement store and tanning salon. And I popped in to have a tan one day. This is a long time ago because I haven't tanned in like 15 years.
Very obvious.
And I popped in to have a tan one day and he seemed a bit off. He was sitting behind the counter and he was eating a cookie, one of those big like – big monster cookies, you know. Okay. He's eating like one of those cookies, and he's got a protein shake, and he's drinking his shake and eating a cookie, and he was acting kind of funny. He's like I said, hey, how's it going? He's like, hey. And he's normally like, hey, you know. It was just weird, and he was very quiet. And I was like, can I get into tan? He's like, yeah, booth 3. And I was like, oh, he's having a bad day,
right?
So I go into booth 3, and I get undressed. I press start, nothing happens. So I like. Put my clothes back on. I go back out. I'm like, hey, it's not coming on. And he's like, sorry. And he like pushes a button. And then I go back in, I strip down, I press start, it doesn't come on. So I put my clothes back on and I go back out. I'm like, but I don't know what's wrong. Cause he seems like he's not having a good day. So I'm like, shit, like maybe he just got some bad news and I'm too nice of a guy. And I'm like, hey man, like, I don't know what's going on, but that bed's not working. And he's like, oh, he's like, try bed 5. And I was like, oh, maybe that bed's just not working. Okay, well, try bed 5. So I go in another bed, get undressed, press start, doesn't come on. So at this point, I'm like, is he fucking with me?
He's doing it on purpose.
So I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out because he's like a totally cool guy. We've never had beef. And he seems like he's kind of being a bit of a dick because he's like not talking to me, not looking at me.
Right.
And then all this stuff with the beds.
I'm like, off the clothes a lot.
I'm like, and now I'm actually running out of time. So I go back out and I go up to the front desk and there's a girl there that I know from the bar, mutual friend.
Right.
And she's looking at having a tan. And I go back up and I go, hey, man, I go, I actually don't have time to tan now. And he just goes, whatever. And then she kind of looks at me like, because she knows we're friends.
Right.
And she kind of looks at me like, you guys have, like, is there a thing? And I'm like,
is there a thing?
Like, I'm like, I don't fucking know, but I got to go. And I think I even said that, like, something like, he's right there. And I go, I don't know what his problem is, but I got to go. Right?
Of course, yeah.
I let him know, like, what the fuck, you know? Right. And I'm in a hurry, so I take off. A couple hours later, I get a call from another buddy of mine. He's like, holy shit, that girl that was in there with you, she kept trying to talk to him, and he kept getting worse. And then she realized he was completely out of it, and she called the paramedics, and he passed out. Holy and they shit. Came in and fucking had to IV him, and all of a sudden he's 100% fine. And so he was having an insulin crash episode when I was there dealing with him.
Right.
He's completely out of it, but I don't know that.
Yeah, how would you know?
And he's drinking a shake and eating a cookie. And that was so it actually occurred to me if he was okay, right?
Yeah.
But he was eating and drinking a protein shake. And I was like, well, like it's probably not a blood sugar thing. He's probably okay because like he's eating and drinking. Yeah. But it obviously hadn't hit him yet.
He didn't have enough. Yeah.
Didn't have enough.
Yeah.
Got behind somehow. So she like closed his business until the paramedics arrived. And then like told everyone downstairs. She's like, I'm sorry, we've got a power outage. We're closed for today. It's a power outage. Like saving face for everything.
Yeah.
And the paramedics came and he's like totally fine after. But that's all it was.
Yep. But what's funny about that is what I'm saying is a guy who knows his way around – your hands shake. You start to feel a little clammy. You start to sweat profusely. I'm surprised he wasn't sweating. That's interesting. Because these are all the things that you get as warnings.
He might have been, but fuck.
Yeah. It's just fascinating to me that he didn't catch it. Because literally I've had that before when I was a kid trying it. And it's like, oh. And I had the supplement store. So I just walk over and grab a carb for, slam down 110 grams of carbs. And literally like 2 minutes later, I'm like, oh, there it is. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nowhere near a danger zone at all, but enough. Like I remember like a customer being too long and I hadn't gotten to the drink yet. And the hand starts just a little bit. And I'm like, I'm going to go drink this while you're here.
Right.
I just got really thirsty all of a sudden. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the insulin's definitely not a must. And growth, you know, I think that the other thing is all of the above, the growth, the drugs, everything. The only thing that disappoints me is when I started, guys wouldn't let you get drugs until you were ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you weren't eating right and you weren't training hard, no one would help you. So you couldn't get them. and then when you got good enough, all of a sudden everyone knew you needed help. And they just showed up for you.
I remember it being like a club that you couldn't get into until you proved yourself in the gym.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even know that there were steroids in my gym until I'd already been there for like 3 years.
Right.
And then that's when and then all of a sudden I was like this, you know, grade 12 kid squatting 4 plates for reps.
Yeah.
And now the other guys were like, oh, hey, you're like after you're done high school and you turn 18, 19, which get you on some tests and you'll fucking blow up. And you know, they start talking to you about it, right?
Start opening.
Yeah. The velvet rope, the curtain, the curtain was pulled back and I realized what was going on, but yeah, it was, you know, it was funny, you know, everyone, like my football coach thought I was on steroids anyways. So it was like one of those situations where I wasn't. And he's like, you know, giving me the look sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you had to earn your way in. Like if you tried to talk to someone about it, they would just, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Don't talk to me about that.
That's rude. Dismissed immediately.
Just immediately dismiss you. Yeah. It was a very, very, it was like asking someone, hey, did you bang your wife last night?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's how personal it was. It was like, fuck off. Who the fuck you think you are asking me about juice? That was the attitude.
Yep.
It was very difficult to get into that circle. But once they saw that you were training like a maniac, they'd like, oh, hey, you know, this is what's going on. Well, they see
all everything, though. You're training, you're getting bigger, which means your foundation has got to be there. You know what I mean? And a lot of these guys, I mean, the very first thing, like every time I put up a Q&A, it's not that I don't want to give any information on it, but it's like the majority of the people that are asking for that stuff don't have the foundation down.
You know what else, too? I'm very lucky that my first steroid dealer had a lot of morals.
Good for him. The internet, where all these guys get their stuff now, does not have any morals.
No, because he was like, okay, I'm only selling you 300 D-ball. That's all you get.
I don't care if you're $5,000.
It's like, you're just going to do D-ball, and I'm not going to sell you anything for like 8 months after that. And I was like, okay. Like, you know, nowadays, they're like,
How much money you got?
I'll give you 20 bottles of this, and you need this and this and this, and they just would just, you'd leave with a shopping cart full of shit, right?
It's so true. You're like, all right, that should do. Then no one tells you how to even take it.
Okay, you got another one there?
Well, that's a good one. I had a guy ask me how many pair of Chucks I have. How many pair of Chucks do you have? Well, I'll just answer with, I got four new pair this week.
I need to, I just blew another black pair out. I blew the bottom out. I need to get online and get a new pair.
Oh, see, you guys don't have Zappos there. We have Zappos. It's, if I ordered right now, I'd have them tomorrow.
I use eastbay.com. They come pretty fast.
Yeah, I like the next day. Like, oh, my laces are dirty. I need new shoes tomorrow. Boom. Done. The laces don't clean like the rest of the shoe.
Right.
If your Chucks get dirty, you're probably okay. But if your laces get dirty, you're
fucked. You can't be changing laces, Dusty. I mean, you have time.
That's Matt valuable. Would unfriend me anyways because he doesn't deal with people with dirty shoes.
You just throw out the whole shoe. That's the Dusty Henshaw way.
It's bad. That's obvious. That is obvious.
Or do you write a check? Do you write a check to someone to get them to change your laces? Yeah,
take these. Actually, I think I'm like the greatest Chuck donator on the planet because every time I keep my white and reds, I always have. You know that.
Yeah.
But smart people keep the older pair and use them for other things. Number one, I don't do other things, so I don't have to worry about it. I'm not out mowing the grass.
Wait, you're not going to paint the spare room?
Yeah, in my New Balance or anything, but.
Yeah.
So they all get donated. So there's a lot of 12s out there being satisfied with their shoes every month. All right, let's see. Boom, I want to get something good here. Bum, bum, bum. Easy. I'm trying, like, I have to skip around a little bit. Oh, here we go. Is gaining X amount of muscle backed by science in a year bogus compared to training DC style? So my take on the question, because I read this earlier, is there a limit to how much muscle you can gain in a year? Because obviously the claims that people say you can do versus what a lot of us have seen done aren't the same.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's a limit. I mean,
yeah, of course.
I mean, your genetics dictate a lot of that stuff. But I mean, I've definitely seen people add, like, if you think about this, 2 pounds of muscle a month for a year.
Yeah.
That's 24 pounds of muscle.
Yep.
Like real muscle, not scale weight, but like I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Stage weight.
And there's a huge gap too. Like, I tell guys all the time when someone will ask me what's a good goal, I say 12 pounds.
Yeah.
And everyone is like, oh, I've heard more. Number one, they're hearing weight. Yeah. I'm talking about muscle. And number two, I'm like, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but let's think about it like this. Do it for 3 years.
Yeah. And then as you get older and you get bigger and bigger and bigger, like, I mean, even if you add 2 pounds of muscle in a year, that changes your physique.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It starts to get a lot harder to obviously add muscle. But I've seen guys skip weight classes.
Oh, yeah.
Like middleweight, skip light heavy.
Right to heavy.
Just go right to heavy and then win.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple guys do that. So obviously maybe that was like the year they stepped on the sauce.
Right. But everything else is lined up too, though. You know, I mean, I think we didn't cover it as much as I would have wanted to with James, but he made his biggest change in his physique last season.
Yeah.
And he did that with basically all he said was, I decided to bodybuild year round.
So that's always funny when I hear a guy as good as James say that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, that's the only way I could do it, or I had no hope.
Right, yeah. You're like, I was locked in since I was 10.
Yeah. But yeah, he did say that. Yeah, it was the first year he didn't miss nothing.
And I feel like if more people would take that attitude, though, I think they'd be surprised because people don't know how much they're leaving on the table. You know, another question I have is someone asked if they could get as big as us at our biggest, if anyone could. And the answer is no, to be honest with you, because that's part of genetics as well. But what you can do is get to your biggest if you're that focused. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that that's where things get messed up is, number one, like, I never knew what I could do. Like, I knew I wasn't genetically inclined for bodybuilding.
Right.
But I knew the best way to find out was to be obsessive.
Yeah, and you are correct. I know it's that old thing, like, everyone really loves that you can do anything. But no, you can't. You can't do anything. No. Like, I can't be an NBA player. Maybe you can't get to 330. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I had a big frame. I'm a big guy at a big frame. I had a lot of time. I started early.
Yep.
You know, all that stuff. I gave up everything else for bodybuilding. So there's a bunch of decisions you have to make there. How important is it to you? You know, like, so, you know, if you want, can anybody get to the biggest I was? Well, they'd have to, probably a lot of people would have to make the same decisions I made. They're not prepared to do that. So, you know,
And I think that nails it too, right there, is those decisions that people don't even think about. Like, when you were in your heart of bodybuilding, you never missed.
No. And it'd be like, you know, I'd take my meal to the party and I'd do all that stuff. But like some people like, there'll be food there.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, there'll be food there and I'll probably have some snacks, but I also need the steak and rice meal.
Yeah.
Like, and just that, like, that to me was like just such an obvious must, but some people just, those are the moments they miss.
Yeah.
They'll be great all week, but they just don't take the meal to the party. They don't have that. They don't have the shake in their bag for post-workout. So then when they get the flat tire, they haven't eaten for 3 hours.
Yep.
Like, it's all that stuff. It's being prepared for stuff to come along that tries to drag you off track.
Yeah.
So that's where preparation, you know, they say, what is that? The luck always seems to happen to the most prepared people.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. But you also, like you said, and I teach all my clients this, if you're leaving, like, you know, life, I get it. Your kids play soccer, whatever. If you think you're going to be gone for one meal, take two.
Yep.
It's in a cooler. It's not going to go bad. You got your ice pack, but don't get stranded without, because I don't want to hear, oh, then I was out too long. Why?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or same thing. People, their day will get long. I've had many people, and don't get me wrong, this isn't something I suggest. I'm a huge proponent, even though I don't sleep, of sleeping. But there are many times when I own the stores that I got behind in meals. So I'd have to set an alarm to wake up to eat my sixth meal.
Right.
That was just, it had to be done. You know what I mean? And you wouldn't think anything of that. That doesn't sound like anything to you. There are plenty of people that I get every week. Oh, I missed a meal, the day got hectic. And I'm like,
how about you at least throw all those calories in a blender and just pound it?
Yeah, or like, I tell clients if they get behind and they don't want to be up till 2 a.m, well, you got 3 more meals, make it 2, eat 1.5 at a time, and we're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's acceptable too, but finding a way to get it down. But the biggest thing, like, because some things do happen, like when I own the stores and you know this from the gym, I couldn't always stop because it's time to eat. you got you know, it's January 3rd and the store is slammed. You didn't always get to stop. There's 100 and something people walking through the door that day.
Yeah.
You know, but you find a way, like you said, or you fit the mac or you do something to get that. And that's going to be that plus genetics are going to decide if you can get as big as even you can be. And then we'll see what that is, you know?
Yeah. And then I think there's that, that huge component, like, some people can't bear the uncomfortableness. Like, you hear guys say, oh, I'm 250 right now. And like, it's just too much.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know how you feel, but I don't know. I just had a goal. I was like, well, this is part of my plan to be 270 on stage one day.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, you have to. I always wore that like as a badge of honor too. Like, it's easy to eat the meals on the days that they just go down.
Yeah.
It's those days, and you know, we've all had them where you're looking at a plate of food and you don't want to eat it all and you just heated it up. It's like, it's got to go down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I always
yeah.
felt like I would just remind myself those are the days I separated myself. I would imagine that those are the days that the guys who were better than me might not have that meal. They might miss it. They might, you know, and that was always my mentality coming up was I'm not as good as these guys. So I have to do this just to have a chance. And that's why I've beaten a lot of guys that, you know, would have never beaten me if they had my brain.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like that was that's how I looked at it. Like, man, could you imagine if X person, you know, if Flex Wheeler had Ronnie's drive?
Right.
What would have happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And because I know some of Flex stories, other people get offended, but Flex was known to miss his diet. He was known to have cheats. You know what I mean? He was that good in spite of himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Same with Cormier.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a few guys, you know, but it's just that, you know, like I remember when I used to bartend, I had a lot of NHL players drink off me, right? Because we had the Edmonton Oilers. So the other guys had come to town too, right? And they'd find their way to our bar because it was a pretty cool place. And so I'd look up and I'd see NHLers drinking all the time. And I remember back in the day, back when you could still smoke inside.
Yeah.
I remember like seeing like NHL all-star defensemen, you know, guys that have cups, just sitting on a bar, chain smoking a whole pack of cigarettes, pounding Jager and Jack shots, just getting obliterated where the door guys had to like carry them to cabs.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, playoff game on TV.
Yep.
And you're like, these guys are fucking animals.
Yeah.
And you wonder how good could that guy be if he hadn't have been blackout drunk 48 hours earlier and didn't smoke like two packs of cigarettes at night and probably do a couple lines of blow in the bathroom because that's what the VIP bathroom was for.
Obviously.
Yeah. You know? So it's like, you know, you see guys at that level, millions of dollars on the line, Stanley Cups on the line. And those guys are in bodybuilding too.
Yep. You know what I think though is true also with the evolution of sports is there is becoming more and more evolution with training and eating, even for those guys. Because I remember looking back as a kid when I got into bodybuilding and wondering, we as a collective group were very, very talented. And we would eat at 7-Eleven after a game because it was the only thing that was open.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, like, and there was no, like, you know, me getting into bodybuilding was comical because I eat so poorly as an athlete. so I used to wonder, like, God,
You're getting the 7-Eleven fried chicken?
Oh, no, I would always get the same thing. I would get the giant Mr. Pibb, like the big 56-ounce or whatever, 64-ounce drink. Like
500 grams of sugar.
And then I would get some donuts, the Hostess donuts, because my dad worked for them. And I would get nachos. Every time. That was
so like zero protein.
There was no there was zero food. What the fuck are you talking about? The donut was the healthiest thing. I mean, yeah, so that was normal. And then you start thinking like, man, like what if we had a nutritionist? What if the team had provided meals? Because I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's probably the entire league was that way. But when you think about those things, and then when as you're watching records and things getting broken more and more now, you realize that that is what's happening.
Yeah.
It is being taught. Like, if you were to ever have a kid, they would never know food the way you knew it as a kid. You know what I'm saying? It just wouldn't because you wouldn't feed them that way. That's child abuse.
They wouldn't get 56-ounce Mr. Pibbs.
And I grew up that way my whole life. My parents worked, so I ate McDonald's every day. Right. And I always found that an interesting thing that what you grew up on is your craving and the thing that's hard to get rid of as an adult. I had the hardest time switching to bodybuilding to stop eating that shit because it was like home food to me. I've worked with clients who have a huge sweet tooth and I was asked growing up, do you guys have dessert a lot every night? Okay. Like, cause to me, dessert never mattered. I never had it. I always ate fried bullshit. You know what I mean? So it's very interesting to see that evolution that, like you said, it goes through all the sports. And then you've got the Kobe Bryants and these guys who skip all of it. And it shows, you know, it always makes me wonder who really is the best.
Right.
If you took all that shit away and everyone was at the highest level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's pretty interesting the levels there are at all that stuff. So, man, you know, but geez, some of these guys so immensely talented. You know, like I'm watching the NFL highlights this year.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome this year. Like the number of just crazy runs and crazy catches and amazing plays. I don't know if it's just the way they're presenting it, but it seems like the game's better.
Right.
You know, so maybe, you know, it's just, as the athletes get better, you know? So, but I know one thing for sure. I'm not getting any better.
No, not that at least.
So maybe at the, but you know, we just did an hour and I got hour 37 here. I don't know if we recorded that whole time, but did pretty good.
We're solid as long as you guys keep watching, which the last episode went way over and it rocked. So I feel like things are good. We're getting you guys through three cardio sessions now. So you're welcome.
Yeah. No, I was real, real happy with the Fuad interview. I was happy that he had a great time.
Right.
Because, you know, you want your guests to come on and enjoy being on the show. And he's like, oh, I don't have to go yet.
Yeah. Good sign. And he's busy as shit. So
busy as shit. He's like, oh, no, this is like, let's just keep rolling, you know? So that was pretty cool. So, and I know Paul had a good laugh that he came up. He wrote on one of the comments. He commented, I have so many Fuad trying to help stories that it would fill a whole podcast.
Yeah, I saw you laughed at but how you said it to my response to the guy who found bottles of Sustanon. I'm like, found
them. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's how you said it.
Do that's you like, hear how you say it?
That's like a hashtag for him now. But it's how you said it.
Just start throwing that on Fuad's posts every now and then. Just
random. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, okay, well, we don't have a guest locked in for next week. So the crush is on.
Getting one.
But we're going to get one. I think the pressure is just going to make this a diamond. That's all.
I'm going to wait till Sunday and then hit somebody up.
Let's not do that.
Damn it. Let's not do that. Bad advice.
Let's try to confirm some messages today. We'll see what we can do. Okay, awesome. Dusty. Thanks. And remember, guys, if you haven't hit the subscribe button, hit it. I think it's right here or here or here. I don't know.
It's on here.
It's on here somewhere. Hit subscribe. Because if you hit subscribe, Scott thanks me for telling you to hit subscribe. That's really what it comes down to. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. Thanks, Dusty. We'll see you next week. And remember, it's just bodybuilding.